This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of Doc and Jock. I am the Doc, John Macaroon. Man, I'm excited to broadcast this week, talk about a lot of good things going on in Detroit sports, getting ever so close to the draft. The Tigers did indeed break a losing streak, but we do got to talk about some concerns early in the year. Man, it's wild when you think about it. The eclipse happened. Everybody survived. I thought it was going to be maybe the zombie apocalypse. Thought some aliens were going to come down, maybe the end of the world. But we're still here, still broadcasting. The weather has been great around town. We got a crazy sign up on 94. I want to see if Adam has seen it. High above in the chopper. I'm very much intrigued. We got a lot to get to in regards to shit that's happened on the internet, shit regarding Detroit sports. So much to get to. Cause did you don the glasses? Look, I'm gonna claim and I'm gonna admit my hypocrisy. I was not anywhere near interested in the eclipse at all until the day of. And you know, naturally, I'm like, why are the kids getting out of school? Why do my kids have to get out of school early to be able to see this thing? And then my wife's like, John, just go pick them up, figure it out. You're not doing much. You don't have anything planned on a Tuesday at 3:45 every single week. I'm like, honey, you know my schedule. She's like, just get them. It'll be okay. Let's go see it. It's like 1:15, and I got these glasses. I'm like, what? You spent money on the glasses? Fine. I put them on, and bro, I was standing there like a tool watching the eclipse going, holy shit, this shit's cool. I saw the sun be covered up by the moon, and I was standing there going, holy shit, this is kind of cool. And then I said, wait a minute, I know we're not in the totality zone, but it didn't look like it covered it completely. She's like, yeah, that's why everyone's going to Ohio. I'm like, you know what? That would have been sweet to be in Cleveland, be in Ohio, to see the moon cover the sun. I thought that shit was cool. So for me, I got in it for 45 minutes, talked about it, wore the glasses, and just used the glasses as a bit for other photos. But because that shit was cool, and I echo the sentiments of everybody else, these scientists are so in the know, they can predict the minute, second that the moon is going to cover the sun in 20 years. That shit was cool.
Yeah, so I had to cover it for work.
Yeah.
And I was on the complete opposite end of that spectrum. I didn't think it was anything great. They sent us up and they had us like tracking all of the traffic trying to get into Monroe, because down over at Luna Pier in Monroe, which is like the furthest south point in the state of Michigan, where you got, I think it was like 99% coverage. It was, I don't know, to me, I was like, don't these people have jobs? Don't these people have things to do? So like then they ended up sending us back up and we had to go down towards Luna Pier and film everybody who was kind of basically looking up at the sun. And look, I was very much annoyed by the entire thing, but when I was out there filming, I thought it was really cool how everything around me kind of transitioned. It went from being kind of light to looking like storm clouds were rolling in to then almost getting this weird like purplish hue. And we were right there by the water, and the water ended up just kind of like the horizon just vanished. Like you couldn't tell what was water, what was clouds. It was really, really weird and kind of freaky and eerie. And then, you know, it goes on for about 20 seconds, maybe not even that. And then all of a sudden starting to get light again. So it was cool. I don't think it was anything revolutionary. I think if you took time out of your day to go spend 3 hours to wait to get into a spot to stare up at the sun, I think you're a little bit of a loser. but that's just me. My whole thing is, I don't know about you. I seen these when I was younger, when I was a kid. I think when you're a kid, it's cool. I think as you get older, you've experienced them once, twice, a couple of times. I don't necessarily see why you're going to waste large parts of your day to go stare at the sun, but you know, who the hell am I?
Yeah, it's science. I get it. You were working and stuff like that. So your black and white shot was the one where you had all the cards on the left, and then it showed the basically the right side where it was basically empty. That was your shot. I think I seen that.
Might have been. I'd have to see what it looks like.
There's a popular black and white. Popular black and white shot where there's a bunch of cars coming back, I think, from Ohio, and then you could see the empty side going, and it was just really cool. It really, in the end, I know people like to see these kind of things. Look, I just think it's people want an excuse to get out of work, and they'll fucking stare at anything and do whatever if they can take half hour and just stare at something that was interesting. But the way it was cool. It was just like you could see like the moon kind of starting to cover it, and it was very cool to stand there a little bit. A lot of the neighbors went outside and looked at it a little bit, and it did get chilly. It didn't get totally dark in Macomb. But it was interesting, and because of the fact it only happens, you know, once every 20, 30 years, the kids, my youngest didn't give a shit. She was just like, uh-huh, and walked inside. My oldest was interested. She was intrigued. She stood out there, and we took pictures and had a good time with it. So it was interesting. It was something unique. It did catch the attention of a lot of people. But yeah, no, I don't think I could – I don't think I was going to plan to get to Ohio to see the totality. But I did say to my oldest, I said, hey, are we going to Wyoming in 20 years? And she looked at me like, no. So it's interesting. And science is unique in regards to kind of how that all shook out and everything like that. But it did get you to think, if you guys are, you know, going to be, you know, in the future, if this lives on for a billion years, what's going to happen when the sun burns out? Like, is it just going to be like 10 minutes of freezing and then the world eventually is going to end? I haven't looked at it, but I know I'm going to Google, when is the sun going to burn out? Because in the end, the sun cannot last forever. And is that going to be the end of the world? Is that going to be something crazy? But that's going to be probably in 5,000 or, you know, a million years. So it'll be crazy to think. But what everyone got caught up in was, even with 99% coverage, it was still 50 degrees outside. So it only dipped like 4 degrees. So that's just how powerful the sun is. And you had to wear the glasses. And I loved all the jokes of people saying, yeah, don't miss the apocalypse. Don't miss the eclipse. Just stare up into the sun. I loved all the jokes that were made, but people did take pictures of themselves wearing the corny glasses. And it was funny to see those that didn't have the glasses. They took their medicine and were like, yeah, we procrastinated, and they didn't get to see the eclipse. Cause did you see, have you flown over the Detroit sign? Because I think it's overhyped, but for a reason that many may not think. The reason why I think people are upset with that Detroit sign, yeah, it looks a little corny, but that rendering was just an AI put out there rendering. It wasn't official. It was just a local person that put that out there that got attention. That was not projected to be what it looked like. Now, I don't think the city needed it. I don't think that, you know, adding a sign on 94, where if you actually drive 94, it's not in the best part. So to me, I don't think you need, I don't.
It's pure Detroit. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't need it. I like that it's green. I might go down there and stop eventually and take a picture in front of it. But to me, I just.
Are you going
to
climb on top of it and have a photo shoot like I'm seeing people on Facebook do?
Are they doing that? See, exactly. Yes. You know, I see, that's how you know you spend too much time online, is that I did think that, like, what's a corny shot I could take? Is it me just smoking a cigar in front of it? Is it me like having like just plopping a grill and barbecuing in front of it? You know, so you think about all that nonsense, but I haven't driven by it yet. Have you seen it? What's your reaction to it? Because, man, people are just ripping on it. I just think that it's okay. Kind of like your reaction to the eclipse. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's something special. But I just think that people have, which I think is fair, people have elevated expectations of how shit should look. And I get it. But guys, nowadays, if it costs money, people don't want to spend it. I mean, think about it. Everybody uses coupons and everybody tries to save a buck here or there. Same with the city. They don't want to spend $5 million on five letters that people potentially realize, like, look, what are the odds someone's going to steal this? And someone at the meeting's probably like, it's pretty high. And they're like, what's the odds someone's going to set the D on fire? That's pretty high. All right, let's go with the cheaper option. And they just throw something out there. So I wasn't expecting some luscious Hollywood-esque style sign on I-94.
Yeah, so I haven't flown over it yet, and I haven't seen it in person. I have seen the pictures of it. And I think the big issue is when you look at the rendering of it, looks pretty sweet. It looks pretty badass. I think it's totally unnecessary, but I think it looks pretty cool. And I think where you're putting it is probably not the best spot to put it. But neither here nor there. I get why you're doing it, and I get what you want to do, and I get the message you're trying to send. Everybody's preparing for the NFL draft. So this is some more of that infrastructure money that's going towards whatever that is. I guess it's the infrastructure. But I think what you sometimes see online and what you kind of are promised and then what you actually get in reality, those are usually two completely different things. And I think this is a prime example of these things. One thing being a 9.5, 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. And then what you actually get and what you actually get to see with your own eyes is closer to like a 6, maybe a 7. It's almost like going on a Tinder date and you got catfished a little bit. I feel like the AI rendering of the actual Detroit sign kind of catfished everybody. And everybody's upset about it because they wanted that rendering sign. They wanted that look. They thought that that was what they were going to get. And then you didn't get it at all. And at no point am I going to go play along the side of 94 and take pictures and climb on it. I think that would be silly. But I think when you look at what you were promised or what they said that you might get or what they said that it could be compared to what you got, it's just a little bit underwhelming. And I think that's where some of that backlash comes. It's just a little bit underwhelming. It to me, it's one of those things that is pure Detroit, right? It is one of those things where you are promised the world and everything is supposed to be great, and it's kind of a hoopty. You know what I'm saying? The only thing is this hoopty has a CD player that works, and that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it's a big hoopla about the draft. And look, you understand that the city's going to try to make itself look good. You know, they're probably going to sweep the streets the week before the draft to make it look a lot better. The city streets, man, it's crazy. Like, I'm trying to avoid it because I already got the email that says, here are the road closures. I haven't even opened it yet. I haven't even looked at what the city is going to look like. If I tried to get down there, I'd probably get lost. I'd probably end up doing four rights and end up right back where I started because I'm so directionally challenged. So, look, it's coming. We all understand. And you guys got to stop being so bougie. It's a sign. It's something new. And let's just see how long it lasts. So let's put the over-under. Today, we're recording in the first 10 days of April. 365 days. Over-under. Does the sign get defaced, ripped apart, or set on fire?
How many days did you say?
365, one calendar year.
1 year. I'll take the under. I'll take the under. Basically, this is going to be good just up until the NFL draft, and then after the draft is when all hell is going to break loose.
So it's going to happen. All right.
Yep. So it might even happen like before the draft. Who knows?
Right, it might happen before this podcast goes live. So
exactly.
Oh, that's some good stuff, because, man, it's wild. Because, you know, and this is the first time it's ever, you know, I have to admit it, Final Four, championship game, I did not watch one single moment live. Didn't care because it was WrestleMania weekend Saturday. Same. I did not watch the championship game because it had all the feel of UConn winning it. I pretty much knew. I was mildly intrigued because Dave Portnoy put a $600,000 bet on it to win $2 million. And it's, you know, mildly intriguing that somebody bet at that such a to know already. I was like, man, that's smart, knowing that UConn really made the tournament a shit show. And it's a compliment to say that they made the tournament boring because they won two tournaments by double digits. That is unreal.
And I think they averaged like 20 points per win through this entire tournament. It's like, crazy.
Like, it's so crazy how far college basketball has fallen off my radar that I have to apologize to Dan Hurley and I have to use the age-old, bro, I was not familiar with your game. Holy shit. He is a mastermind. He wants to blow teams out. He's hardcore. He runs hardcore practices. He's like Tom Izzo, but that actually has talent. So it's nice to see.
But he wins.
But he wins and is the embodiment of everything that State fans or Michigan fans would want. A guy that's crazy, that is getting all the talent and is just whooping ass. So good for UConn. But the big story kind of emerged that Calipari was flirting with Arkansas. He wasn't feeling the love anymore in Kentucky, and Greg Campy ended the run of John Calipari. Now, because I understand the diva mentality and the idea that you want to be loved where you're at, but my God, you were at Kentucky. You were getting all the blue bloods. Yeah, the fire got hot. Yeah, everybody wants to be wanted, but do you really think that Calipari was that sensitive that he needed the love and was like, you know what, if you guys don't want me, then I'm going to pursue Arkansas? People are saying that he was flirting with Ohio State. He maybe has an intrigue regarding Arkansas and the money that can be instilled in the NIL through the Tyson family. But I didn't think that someone would be that sensitive. I think Kentucky is the far better program to stay at, even if you are in a position where some of the people don't like you. All you got to do is have one Final Four run, and you're back in good graces. Just do your job better and take it as a challenge. Calipari, in some sense, is acting similar to the players he may complain against. When the moment gets hot and you don't feel the love, you bounce. That's weak sauce in my mind. Stick with it. Try to get back. Try to just change it up a little bit. It wasn't like the Kentucky program was you know, in a bad spot. Yeah, losing to Oakland sucks. But what's your reaction to, man, potentially Campy took out one of the great college coaches?
I think it's hilarious. And I think it's kudos to Greg Campy, right? This is a guy who's been at Oakland University for what, like 40 some years. To see him basically run his friend, John Calipari, out of Kentucky, I think is awesome. And really similar to what you're saying, right? Like, things got a little bit hot. Things got a little bit tough in Kentucky for you. And what do? The moment the fire gets a little bit too hot, you turn and you run tail and you go to Arkansas? You go to Arkansas? Like, this guy is a storied and a historic basketball coach. And he goes to Arkansas? Like, what? So, like, I get that it is tough in Kentucky, because really and truly, when it comes down to it, Kentucky basketball is all they got. Kentucky basketball is the thing there. You know, like, the Lions are the thing here, or, you know, when the Red Wings are good, the Red Wings are the thing here. In football season, college football season, Michigan football is the thing here. In Kentucky, it's just Kentucky basketball. There isn't anything else. There's nothing else. They don't really have any other sports teams. So that is what it is. So everybody is a fan of Kentucky basketball. And you've underwhelmed every single year. When we were talking about Oakland's initial game against Kentucky, that was part of the reason I picked Oakland to win that game, was because Kentucky always gets there and they just kind of crap the bed and they roll around in it. John Calipari doesn't do a good enough job of coaching these guys and getting these guys mentally prepared for this first game, and they always have these lapses in this first game. Now, if they can get by that first weekend, they usually do okay in the tournament. They don't do great. They haven't won anything, but they do a good enough job getting to the Elite Eight, getting to the Sweet 16. It's just that first week is always the bugaboo, and I find it hilarious that Calipari loses to a low-level school, and I say low-level in finger quotes here, Oakland University, loses to one of his good friends in Greg Campy, and now he's going to – look, I know that they're a Division A school or Division I school. I know it's in the SEC, but Arkansas is a low-level Division I school. It is similar to what? Central Michigan? You're just playing a little bit of a better conference. So what are you doing? I find it hilarious that this is the case. And it's amazing to me that a guy who has done so much for the game of college basketball, when it gets a little bit rough, it gets a little bit tough, this guy is on the way out and he's going to a much more lax job. I don't think Arkansas fans are as dialed in on Arkansas college basketball as they are with the Arkansas football team. I think Arkansas basketball takes a bit of a backseat to their football team. So I find it to be hilarious. I find it to be an incredibly interesting choice, especially when you hear reports that he had interest in going to Ohio State. He had other interest in a couple of other schools. This really seems like this was like the third or fourth school on his list, and he ended up there. So it's a really funny situation just to kind of see how things go. And I think it's even a bigger feather in the cap of Greg Campy, who had a fantastic year this year, to run out one of the historic coaches from a historic basketball program and basically send him to the little brother SEC school in Arkansas.
I'm not going to lie. I did mark out when they did play one shining moment, and you have Jack Golke, who literally had the moment of the tournament in the video where he does the shooting arrow. It's timed perfectly. It's used beautifully in one shining moment. But yeah, to me, college basketball is off the radar and it's crazily.
Did you watch any of the women's games?
No. I was
no.
Look,
to see, I watched more of the women's games, more of basically just Caitlin Clark than I did of any of the men's. Like, I watched the Oakland games for Oakland, and then after that I just kind of was like, all right, whatever, I'll just kind of keep track of everything. You know, you get the updates on your phone and you kind of get the updates through everybody talking about whatever. I paid zero attention after Oakland got bounced, and I watched more time of the women's game than I did of the men's game.
Do you think Caitlin Clark is going to revolutionize the game at the next level?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
No. I think here's the thing. I think she's a very good player, right? I think she's an incredibly good player. I think she does things that a lot of players don't do, whether they're men or women. I think she has the ability to get her teammates involved. I think she has the ability to shoot the lights out of the basketball. And I think she is talented. I don't think she's going to be this great moving force if she goes to the WNBA and she's going to make the WNBA relevant. What I find to be even more interesting is she can get a bigger, better deal to go play in Ice Cube's Big Three, and she'll make more money doing that than she would playing in the WNBA. The WNBA is a non-factor. You don't make any revenue. The only reason you are held up is by the NBA. Like, you have money that is fed to you from the NBA, and it's kind of one of those things where, like, the NBA trying to go global. And if we're going to go global, we've got to get girls involved. So how do we get girls involved? Let's make a girls league. It's just kind of like this big propped up shop by the NBA just to try to push basketball product and to make it more of a global sport and to get more dollar bills from girls. You know, not a lot of girls pay attention to the men's game. So here's the girls game. And if they, you know, are paying attention to the men's game, well, then they'll probably pay attention to the girls game too. So it's a way to double dip it. So it's just the WNBA is irrelevant, doesn't make money. It's not really worth anything. I don't think her going to the WNBA is going to make it sell anything or is it going to make it relevant in any case. And I think it would be more interesting, honestly, to see her play in the Big Three with a bunch of old schools and a bunch of has-beens that don't play anymore. But no, I don't think she's going to revolutionize the game at all.
Yeah, got it. It's going to be interesting to see how she transitions to the next level and what the coverage is going to be like, because she made it mainstream and they outdrew the men's game. And because I think the men's game was basically predicated on gambling, most people recognized that UConn was going to win. And look, credit to Purdue. They were able to get to that level, and it was two number one seeds that made it intriguing, at least up until that point. And clearly, a 9-20 start is not in anybody's best interest. I was not interested at all. Basically, it was kind of like, okay, how close can they make it? And does Dave Portnoy win his bet? And he was able to. So good for UConn. Let's see now if Kentucky throws the bag, because the rumor is they're going to make him an offer to Dan Hurley that he can't refuse. So I'm curious to see. What's that offer? Could he turn it down? Do they make it public and just say, hey, this is what you want, blank check, come sign it, and it's yours? Because that's you're in that position if they're going to say, hey, you get $25 million a year for 7-8 years, and we're just going to make you just one of the richest people in the history of sports. It's going to be hard to turn down. So we'll see. Dan Hurley, I love what you do. Hearing your story and hearing your talk openly about mental health issues, you just helped to break the stigma even further and to acknowledge that the use of professionals to help you with your mindset and really just highlights the importance of psychology and making sure that just beyond the court, that there are things you can do to make a great coach even better. When you add talent to somebody who's got his mentals right, look out, you get fire. And that's what you get with UConn. They're legit. And I love the fact that he said that UConn's the top of the mountain, baby. We're the head of the table in regards to college basketball. And for now, until someone unseats them, it's UConn and everybody else. Because speaking of top of the mountain, the Red Wings are not going to be seated at the head of the table anytime soon. And it's disappointing. You know, I was excited to have an opportunity to sit and watch an entire hockey game so that we could talk about it on the podcast. I felt like it was fate that we could sit and analyze it. And what I was left with, here are my three notes. One, in big moments, the Red Wings do not have people that are closers. Yeah, you give credit to the Capitals goalie. He did everything that he possibly could. The Red Wings had great effort, but in the end, against better teams, this was an example of why the Red Wings are not a playoff team. I just now hope that they just lose the rest of the way and don't get in. Clearly, yeah. And here's why. Clearly, when the moment was the hottest, they blinked first. And in hockey, that's the small margin of error, is that if you turn the puck over at the worst time and it gets buried in your net, you lose the game. And that's what happened. The Red Wings were pressuring. That's what's going to happen against the Rangers for four games. You're going to pressure, you're going to try, and you may win a game. But the Red Wings are not a playoff team. Yzerman messed up by not adding one more sharpshooter, one more guy that you could perceive to be a sniper. And then third, And I hate to do it because I know he had a good effort, but Dylan Larkin is not Ovechkin in regards to in clutch moments, in the biggest games, when you need Dylan Larkin to supersede his own talents, when you need him to put the team on his back, score three goals, and just say, I don't care if the goalie's going to stop it. I don't care. I'm going to take this puck and figure out any means necessary to get this puck into the net. I just find that Dylan Larkin's leadership and his big game abilities is not where this hockey club needs. He's a great role player. He's a great player. He can score you 30 goals, but he's one of those classic guys that when the moment is the brightest and this team needs to win, collectively, not enough. And it's disappointing because you give him a big money contract. It's not his fault in totality, but I was left sitting there going, no Larkin, no Patrick Kane, nobody's scoring. And again, you have a goaltender that has had a rough couple months in net in a big game. It was a big game. And like I said beforehand, I told you I felt like it was going to be a loss, but maybe in overtime, I thought the Wings could at least put the puck in the net. It didn't happen. And here's the craziest part, cuz, of all of this, and I'm curious to get your reaction of this whole fiasco. The Eastern Conference around them is collapsing. Nobody wants that eighth spot, and the Wings cannot grab it by the balls and take it. The Flyers are losing. Toronto loses when we need them to. The teams just below and just above are not doing anything to pull away. So the Red Wings still, at the time of this recording, have a chance to get to the postseason. But the hopes of anything tangible is fading because this hockey team just isn't good enough to close the deal. And so to me, I've checked out. I'm over it. I'm ready for next year. But to me, this has been a disappointment because there was avenue for growth this year, and it was a wasted opportunity is how I'm viewing this season.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And it's not just Dylan Larkin, who is a guy who comes up short in big moments. Where's Alex DeBrincat been?
Yes.
Where is he? This is a guy who you went out and you traded for. You paid big money for. This is a guy who you had to renegotiate his contract and bring him in here. He wanted to be here to play here. He's not giving you anything either. I think you're right in your assessment. This team has zero closers. Watching that game, Washington's goaltender deserved the shutout in that game. It's unfortunate that Patrick Kane scored a goal with 1 second left. But you have the ability to maintain pressure, keep pressure on, scramble around the net, but you have nobody who can put the puck in the back of the net. You don't have that guy. We've been saying it for years. Dylan Larkin is not a number one center. Dylan Larkin is maybe a number two center, but probably a number three center. Dylan Larkin is not that guy that you need to build your team around. He's an accompanying piece. In this case, Alex DeBrincat's not that guy either. So he's an accompanying piece. You need a guy. Like, you don't have a guy, you know? If you stayed and you watched the following game that was on ESPN the other night, Nathan MacKinnon, he's that guy. Cale Makar, he's that guy. Those guys are that guy. They are him. Dylan Larkin is not him. DeBrincat's not him. Patrick Kane 5 years ago was him. Patrick Kane 10 years ago was him. Patrick Kane, up until recently, has been that guy who is him. At this point in Patrick Kane's career, he's just a veteran, man. He's a veteran who's got really good hands, good vision, and every now and then he'll give you a timely goal. But you can't base your offseason around bringing in a guy like DeBrincat and bringing in a guy like Kane and being like, we're going to be good. Not when you get to the trade deadline and it's evident that you need a piece and you just sit on your hands. The fact that the Wings do not make the playoffs this year, it's solely on Steve Yzerman. It is solely on Steve Yzerman. It is his fault. Now, whether he's got a bigger vision in mind or he's got a bigger plan of grandeur, we'll see how it works out. But at some point, you got to take that next step. You've got to figure it out. We're 5 years in. If it's not this coach, then who's the coach? Who's the coach going to be? If it's not Dylan Larkin, then who's the guy going to be? You've got to figure it out. And like, if you can look at Dylan Larkin, and you're going to tell me he's the guy, I'm going to tell you you're wrong every time. If you're going to look at Alex DeBrincat and you're going to be like, he's the guy, I'm like, well, you're getting closer, but you're still wrong. You know, if you're going to tell me that you have a team that is able to get on a run and make some noise in the playoffs, I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. It's just not going to happen. It's not happening this year. You need to add more pieces to this team. You need to figure things out. Your goaltending is still an Achilles heel on this team. I don't think your defense is strong enough. And we've already talked about the offense not being able to bury the puck when you need them to. So It is frustrating if you're a Red Wings fan because this is a team going into Tuesday night. They controlled their destiny in their own hands, and they let one get away. And they lost a stranglehold, or what could have been a stranglehold, on that final playoff spot. Instead, you lose it, and now Washington's sitting in that chair. And then you now have to battle, scratch, and claw to get back into that spot and to basically cement your spot, in the playoffs. And there's no guarantees that you do that. Watching that game, they end up putting up a stat where if the Wings would have won that game, I think they would have had like a 79% chance of making the playoffs, which is really, really good. Especially with, I think it was roughly six games, maybe seven, eight games left. If they lost that game to Washington, all of a sudden, Washington and Detroit become neck and neck. Washington, I think, is like a 36% chance to make the playoffs, while Detroit is a 37% chance of making the playoffs. And that's only because Detroit's schedule gets a little bit easier towards the back end, while everybody else has a little bit more of a tough road to go. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in these final games, but it is frustrating as a Wings fan to know that it really felt like there was a moment in time earlier this year where you could have just went on a little bit of a run, and instead you shit the bed, and now you've got a scratch and claw for playoff spots while everybody around you is trying to give it to you, and you can't take advantage of it. And it's cool to have all these guys who can score 10 goals, but all these guys don't score 10 goals when the pressure's really on, when you're playing what is the equivalent of playoff light hockey. None of these guys are built for that moment. And whether it's because you haven't ever been in that moment, which we've talked about, you need to get some playoff experience on this roster, or it's just because they're not built for that moment, it is a bit of an interesting thing to watch this team struggle down the course of the remainder of the season. And in my estimation, Steve Yzerman's fault.
Okay, so who's most to blame? Is it Derek Lalonde, who has not shown that he can inspire a group to do more than maybe the collective unit? Is it Steve Yzerman, like you said, who did not do enough at the deadline to instill that this team can have some playoff success? The most valuable thing that this team could have gained was experience playing together. Even if you lose four games. I know that, you know, I said earlier that I just wished it was done, because I'm of the mindset, if you can't win it all, then just don't be part of it. I'd rather not see them get embarrassed. But at the same token, the experience that they could have got by playing well, by being a team that looks like a squad that is taking the next step, right now the stock meter is going in the wrong direction. And I think partly that's due to Steve Yzerman and his long-term approach and sacrificing the ability at the same time to also, you have to have that balance of winning too. You are charging people money to come to these games. You are, you know, at some point have to put a playoff team out there. So it's just crazy that it hasn't happened yet. Or is it, like we discussed earlier, the combination of Larkin and DeBrincat and the big-time players just not stepping up? Because the team did play inspired. They did try their absolute best. It's just the results weren't there, and they made the critical mistake, which they've been doing in those moments. So who's most to blame for this collapse of the Red Wings, not getting enough points at critical moments?
I think a lot of it falls at the feet of Steve Yzerman. He's the one who puts this roster together. He's the one who goes and basically buys the groceries. And then I think it has a lot to do with the players. I don't think these players on this team are good enough. I don't think their leader is, I don't have a lot of stock in him. I don't think much of him. I don't think the guys around him I value very much. I think you've got a lot of good players, right? You've got a lot of good guys, a lot of guys who you can slot on other rosters and they'll fill in nicely, but you don't have that guy. You need a guy who is a little bit transcendent, a guy who can kind of take over a game when things are going right, a guy who somehow finds the back of the net, a little bit of puck luck, because the guy's always in the right position and he can just kind of tap the puck in, or he gets lucky and it just kind of flutters by the goalie. Those guys tend to make their own luck. You don't have anybody on this team. You don't have anybody on this team who shines in those big moments. So I think it's a little bit of Steve Yzerman. I think it's a little bit of the players, just because they're not good enough. I know everybody wants to come down on Derek Lalonde. Look, I don't know. I mean, that guy doesn't really inspire me when he talks. I find him to be a fascinating interview, but I don't find him to be a guy who's going to really get me motivated to run through a wall. So if you want to blame him, sure, go ahead and blame him. But really and truly, when it comes down to it, I think it has a lot to do with Steve Yzerman putting this team together. And then I think it has a lot to do with the players that he's put together. I just don't think they necessarily complement each other, and you don't have a dog on this team.
It's unfortunate, you know, because you look at it and you say, you know, it's a man, the hype surrounding Tuesday's game was out of this world. Fans were excited. They were super looking forward to the opportunity to defeat a Washington Capitals team. We'll see how they respond 24 hours later on Wednesday. So we'll see what that looks like by the time this hits the airwaves. So we'll see. It's crunch time. I think just a handful of games left, four games left before the season, and then it'll determine what's going to happen with this Red Wings squad. You look at it now, switching gears to a team that really was starting to get on the nerves of their fan base with their lack of offensive production, still scoring an average of four runs or less through 11 games. I think they've scored 38 total runs. So you look at this baseball team, the Detroit Tigers, and boy, did that win against the Pittsburgh Pirates come at the right time. A comeback win against a solid closer to take them to 7-4, but there are legitimate concerns. And the biggest concern is the fact that we've talked about it last week and we'll talk about it again today. The offense is not good enough. And when Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green combined do not have the metrics that you're looking for from those kind of hitters. Look, Riley Green's hitting home runs. He went viral for the unbelievably embarrassing uniform that Fanatics is putting him in. But I'll say this, he's at least been hitting home runs. Spencer Torkelson kind of has reverted back to the guy that's been a player that has been kind of criticized for his inconsistency. It's still 11 games in, but look, the offense is not good enough to, in my opinion, catch what the Cleveland's doing. Cleveland's off to a hot start, and they don't look like they're going to slow down anytime soon. Maybe their pitcher now, unfortunately, being done for the year, maybe that puts the Tigers in a better spot. But right now, the Tigers, kind of where you expect them to be, just a little bit over 500, you know, 7-4 when we're talking. But at the same token, there's a major wart that everybody's talking about, and that's the offense. What's going on with it? And do you think that we're being hypercritical so early in the year? You know, early on, pitchers tend to have a little bit of an advantage because of the weather and things like that. And still only 11 games in, you still have a lot more to go. But it is what it is in regards to you got a young team that's just kind of developing, and this is what we get. You don't have bona fide superstars on this team.
Yeah, and look, it's very similar to what you're getting with the Red Wings, right? Like, these two teams are very similar. I feel like the Red Wings are a little bit closer than the Tigers, but they both have critical flaws, and those critical flaws show up on the offensive side of the game. This team can't hit its way out of a wet paper bag. This team can't get timely hits. If you get a man on, you're not getting them home. This is the same problem that killed this team last year, and it's going to be the same thing that's going to kill this team this year. It's a monster issue. When you looked at this lineup going into the year, you knew it was going to be a problem. You knew this was going to be an issue, and it was never addressed. And now you're kind of seeing it. Yeah, it was nice for this team to get off to that hot start where they won four straight, right? And it was one of those things where you're like, okay, cool, everybody's feeling really good. And you end up getting into this part of the season where you get past opening day, things kind of start to slow down. The excitement level kind of, that initial excitement kind of wears off. And now you're watching these games. You're like, man, these are a grind to get through. These are a bit of a struggle to get through because your offense can't generate any offense. You can't get anybody home. This sucks because you're seeing the pitching. The pitching's able to keep you in games. The pitching's able to keep you in games for the most part here. Look, you're going to have a clunker here and there, but if I tell you that the Detroit Tigers lineup is going to roll out there every single day, and out of 10 days, they're going to give you 7 or 8 good quality starts, all you got to do is pick up a bat and drive the ball and get some guys home on some of those other starts, you'd be like, okay, cool, I'll take that. Well, that's kind of what you're getting. But they're not picking the bats up, and they're not driving it home. I don't think it has anything to do with the season, with it being too early or anything like that. I think Torkelson is what Torkelson is. I don't think he's going to ever be that guy that we thought he was going to be. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy that we drafted him to be. I think Riley Green will start to heat up. I just don't have the faith in Torkelson at this point. I don't know if he was brought up way too early, if mentally he can't handle it, I don't know if maybe trading him a better, a different change of scenery would be good for him, and maybe you could get something back for him. I don't know. I have no idea. He is a frustrating case because he's a guy who you're counting on. He's a guy who this team has been built around, and you're just not getting the production from him. And look, the bats are incredibly quiet for long stretches, spanning two and three games sometimes, and that's an issue. Who do you blame that on? Is that the players? Is that the coaching? Is that the organization? Because in my estimation, Scott Harris, again, very much like Steve Yzerman, bought the groceries for this team. Scott Harris had a bit of a payroll. He could have went out and brought in a veteran bat. We talked about JD Martinez a couple of times. Instead, you go out and you don't do anything. You got basically 4A players on this team up and down this lineup. You know, you've got a guy in Javi Baez who is taking up a roster spot, and you were the guy who came out and said, look, we're not going to have veterans holding back young talent. We need those at-bats for the young talent. That was his excuse for not going out and getting a veteran bat. Well, you got a guy like Javi Baez who's holding back young at-bats because he's still on this roster. That, to me, goes to the organization, whether that's Scott Harris, whether that's Chris Illich. It goes from the top. I think you have a very good coach in A.J. Hinch. And I think some of the players on this team are just a little bit miscast. I think they're decent players, but I don't think you have superstars on this team. You don't have even stars on this team. You've got a very young baseball team that's still trying to figure itself out. And I think in the hands of A.J. Hinch, that's fine. But I don't think putting them in spots where you're like, you guys got to go out and you got to get these at-bats and you got to get all these hits. I don't think they're in that. I don't think they should be in that position. You tend to need that veteran at-bat who can kind of spell these guys and kind of break that lineup up where you got a couple of batters not hitting anything, all just going 0-for. You get that one guy who can get on base and it can kind of start a rallying, and you get another guy who can get on base. And now you're moving the guys around the bags and you're getting guys home, and next thing you know, you're not getting beat by 3, 4, 5 runs. You know, you're able to stick with the team. You're able to maybe force it to extra innings. I think the one thing you can say about this team, it's incredibly gritty, right? It's a team that's going to go down swinging. It's a bunch of try-hard guys. It's a bunch of guys that are going to go out there and they're going to give it everything they got. Sometimes that effort's just not good enough. I think this past weekend with the game against the Oakland A's, I think fatigue maybe got in the mix a little bit. They didn't get that day off that they were looking for. They end up having to do that doubleheader because of the Mets. Then they come home, have all the excitement of opening day, and they scratch that win out. And then you go into the weekend, that opening day high kind of wears out. And next thing you know, you're just kind of like going through the motions, and the excitement's not necessarily there. And I think you get a little bit tired. You can't get out of your own way. Thank goodness you're able to scratch it out in the ninth against the Pirates on Tuesday. So thank God for that. But I mean, it's one of those things, man. The bats are going to crush this team. The bats are going to be the thing that really upends this team when you could get into a battle to win the Central. It's going to be one of those things that's going to really trip them up. Who do you blame the poor bats on? Is it the players? Is it the coach? Or is it even higher than that? It's the organization. It's the owner and it's the general manager.
No, it's still early. I think that there's talent. You look at it top to bottom. The veterans are kind of delivering. It sucks that Baez is on the injured list. Javi Baez, clearly we all know, is not going to deliver. And At Detroit Podcast has basically become the complain about Javi Baez troll account where we can tell funny jokes and make fun of the fact that he's one of the most, you know, his futility is going to kill the Detroit Tigers. But I look at it like the potential's there that Torkelson, Green, and Parker Meadows, and now this Colt Keith, who I think is going to be a stud, who he has the makeup of a guy that can be a stud. That's a core. And it's still early, and I just think that, you know, in regards to where these guys are going to end up, I think by next month, you'll see that these guys are going to pick it up. With the warmer weather, you'll realize, hey, you're still only 11 games into the season. The team is still 7-4, and they're clutch. And even though throughout the early times that, you know, you didn't dominate the A's, for some reason, the A's just have your number, and you could weather that storm by having good series against the White Sox and the Mets. And I think the comeback was really telling against the Pirates. You realize, hey, it's a nine-inning game. And I really respect A.J. Hinch. I think that for the way in which he describes the game is stellar. And I think that when you look at it from the perspective of kind of in the big picture view, they're trying to get the most out of a roster. And to bring it full circle, look, they're trying to get a Hollywood sign with a, you know, McDonald's budget. And that's all you can get is to say, okay, we got to give these guys a young chance. You know, the Detroit sign's not going to light up. It's not going to have stars. It's not going to have security. It's not going to bling. You're not going to look at it and be like, wow. But in the end, it does its job. You go, oh, okay, it's okay. These guys, I think Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson, Colt Keith, and Parker Meadows, I think by the time that May and June hit, you'll start to see their averages creep up and they'll be acceptable. It stinks now, but because 7-4 is not bad at all. You'll take it, especially, you know, when you look at it, they're still like well below spending. So the issue is with Scott Harris and A.J. Hinch and management not putting investments in the offense. They're putting it in the pitching and young players in the minors, and that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to get as much as you can out of a team. And bottom line, in life, whether it's creating designs, whether it's production, whether it's tech people, bottom line, you get what you pay for. And to me, that's what's going to keep this team probably in the 80s, and their win total is, eventually speaking, it'll come back to haunt them. That good pitching and better talent will dominate. But right now, you're not playing the best teams. So take advantage. Take advantage of next week when you play the Twins at home. And the series I want to watch, upcoming Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you get four games against the Twins. That's going to be a telling. And then you get the series. Monday the 15th, 6:40, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you get the Rangers. And they got they're the real deal. How many wins you get in the next stretch of games is going to be telling. And we'll have a lot more to detail regarding this baseball team after the next two series. Twins and Rangers, two squads that potentially could do some things against the Tigers. And let's see the competitive level. Let's see where they can take this moving forward. All right, we got about 10 minutes left in this episode of Doc and Jock on the Detroit Sports Podcast Network. I know we're going to talk about free agents and looking at the cornerback spot, but I got to get your assessment. Jared Goff set the internet on fire by complaining yet again about the internet. Now, to set the table, he goes on a podcast, which is very player-friendly. Obviously, when you go on a podcast that's hosted by your former teammate in college, it's not going to be super hard-hitting. And I posted a clip that was funny of his former teammate saying he cried and wept when Jared Goff won the playoff game, which I thought was hilarious, fodder for our jokes, in that we don't do that here. We may not have as many guests, but we don't do podcasts like that where the guests are... we don't kiss ass with the guests. We have a good time. We ask direct questions. We pay the compliments, but we don't do what that host did, which is very funny. But in the end, look, I love the fact he took offense to it, but what these guys do is symbolic of what they don't like what the media does, is he took a question that he was offended by Bob Winowski, a columnist, where Bob was kind of joking but kind of saying, hey, nationally the perception is that the 49ers have all the talent and you guys don't. And they had a playful exchange, but Jared Goff was offended by it. And he should be. But it doesn't have to be something you got to keep going on and podcast and complaining about, dude. Listen, when you win, things are nice. When you don't, we speculate, we talk. And we are not team-run media. Our job is not to do public relations. Our job is to give our opinions and to state why we like certain things and to state why we don't. And it's not offensive if I sit here today and say, well, yeah, I still think they're a number 2-3 team in the NFC. I think you lost a lot in Jonah Jackson and CeeDee Deuce. I think that your secondary is still not good enough. And without the draft, I think your defensive line is hopeful, but we still have yet to see what Davenport, who's been injured a lot, and Reeder coming back from injury have done. That doesn't make me a hater. It just says this is my opinion, and my job is not to kiss your ass, Jared. I'm sorry. It's just not. My job is to speak my mind and look. You know, we don't have to give our business, but the proof's in the pudding. Media critiques are higher than normal, which is fine, but y'all are consuming media at the highest level. More people are doing podcasts. More people are consuming the websites. More people are consuming. Look, okay, I'll say this, and I'm not going to, I don't like love shouting out competition, But if you just type in Detroit Sports Podcast, if you type in Sports Illustrated, our stuff is going to pop up, but other stuff will pop up too. And guess what? Through the efforts of the success of a Sports Illustrated, of a Vox Media, more companies are doing what I'm doing. And guess who they are? A to Z Sports and Sporting News are copying the model, which is get somebody that loves the team and pays attention, and boom, talk about the team. So now you have three more outlets covering the Lions doing the same thing, along with the Sideline Lion Report and the others that are doing it. So guess what? Why would they copy a model? Because it's successful. Why would they do that? Well, if it's a popular topic and you're smart, running a Lions website is very entertaining and fun, and we put in the work and we got rewarded by having the opportunity to have Detroit Sports Podcast represented with a major media company. So to say that, you know, the handful of you that critique us, it's funny, it's annoying, but I get it. I get the critique where you say, hey, there's certain angles that people look at. If you don't like the angle, don't read the story. But the angle is going to be there. So to me, I never was bothered by stuff that it was like, okay, I listen to the podcast first 5 minutes. And if I don't like it, I'm like, Christian, hey, listen to the podcast and write this up. I don't want to go on a listen to a kiss-ass podcast. I like hard-hitting stuff a little bit more. So I move on. I don't sit there and have an emotional reaction and go online and be like, all the media in Detroit suck. Dude, you guys got good coverage among the best. Is it perfect? No. Are there columnists who are controversial in town? Yeah, but that's their job. So the more you talk about it, the more you're actually, look, guys, I hate to say it, but I can keep saying it. The more that you critique the media, the more people go, what the hell is John writing about that everybody hates it? So you're not killing the media by critiquing me. I'm sorry to say. And I like I said, you know me, I don't want to brag about myself a little bit more, but 9 media companies called and said, hey, are you NFL guys, free agents? Do you want to come cover the NFL? Why did they do that? You know, but you weren't going to get the NFL writers from Fan Nation because we were loyal to the guy who promised us the world and he delivered on it. So you weren't going to get it, but it was certainly flattering. It's certainly flattering to see the Sporting News that I loved. I loved because Sporting News Radio, I loved listening to that national network back in the day. Sporting News Radio, loved it. They're in the game now. Look, the more the merrier. So to me, it bothered me that Jared Goff took that angle to bring it. And look, I mean, of course we wrote about it, so I'll benefit from it. But it's annoying because he's only giving half the story. There was a lot of positivity. Jim Costa said it. Half the media. Look, I wrote a story last year. I said why the Lions are going to win 13 games. So there is a fair mix. But I get it. Players are more sensitive. But come on, California kid. This is Detroit. You're going to hear some things you don't like. I'm sorry, man.
I mean, I guess if it motivates him, it's fine. But look, I didn't listen to the interview. I didn't even know he did an interview. I didn't even know he said anything.
Yeah, it came out just before we recorded, about a half hour before.
I haven't even heard it, so I don't even know what he said or what he was belly aching about.
I'm gonna send it to you right now. Yep, I'm sending it to you now. The clip that's gone viral.
The back and forth that he had with Bob was nothing. It was You know, Bob basically presented a question. He was like, "Hey, you know, you guys got some really good players. They aren't considered superstars like
the 49ers
have." And like, it was a fun back and forth. So I don't know. Look, if it motivates you, cool. Yep. If it gives you fuel for the fire, cool. Michael Jordan, historically and infamously, would just make up things to get him motivated, to get him going. Like, things weren't even real, but he was like, oh, they were talking shit about my mom, so now I'm pissed. So he would do things to fuel him. So if this is what's going to get you fueled, this is what's going to get you fired up, so you can help take this team to the next level, go for it. I have no problem with him saying whatever he said. I got no problem with him being upset with the media. If you want to be angry about it, go ahead. I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be good. I think it'll make for interesting work for you. It'll make for interesting conversations with me. So I think it's fine. Like I said, I find it interesting because that wasn't like it was a hard hitting question.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where he just kind of proposed it and you kind of had a little back and forth. It got some national play because it was some fun banter back and forth. And look, you guys were 30 minutes away from winning a Super Bowl. If you can get things figured out, You should be a team that is in Super Bowl contention this year and hopefully are going for it. And if this is what's going to help get you there and is going to help get you over the hump, get you over that line, going to get you in earlier and get you staying later, and it's going to get you working with all your receivers a little bit more, working on putting a little more zip on the ball, working on watching plays a little bit more, drawing up crazier, wilder plays with Ben Johnson, then hey, man, go for it. I'm all about it, and I give you two thumbs up for it.
Yep. So with our final 5 minutes here, I thought that the topic of which position this Lions football team is going to probably upgrade the most is very valid. I think you're right. It's the cornerback spot. I think that they still got to add somebody. And, you know, in thinking about if there was a free agent out there, maybe Jerry Jacobs as a role player could also get have an opportunity here in Detroit, but I think maybe his time has passed because you're seeing it too. Wednesday, Tyrion Arnold was in town, taking pictures, social media, doing the whole rounds and thing. Kool-Aid McKinstry's been in town. Quintez Stiggers. They've done extensive work on cornerbacks and wide receivers. So to me, it has all the earmarkings that Brad Holmes is going to pop his cornerback cherry and pick one in the draft. I don't think they do it in free agency. They could still, but I don't think they're going to spend $10 million on Gilmore. I think that ship has sailed. You got to pay St. Brown, Goff. You got big money deals that you got to make with other people. So to me, cornerback is very important, way more than wide receiver. In the coming days, I think by the time this episode drops, we're going to have a story at All Lions with the burning question, is wide receiver a position really of need? It's not, because you got a guy that you signed to a futures deal in Tre'Quan Smith. You got Donovan Peoples-Jones. You got Khalif Raymond. You got Jameson Williams going to get some targets. You could get a guy later in the draft because it's very deep. I think cornerback is starting to, in my mind, it looks like cornerback is going to be targeted in the draft. And rightfully so. Whether it's at number 29 or later on, if it's TJ Tampa, if it's one of the local guys that you can check out who visited, they're going to find one. Brad knows who it is, and they're going to get one. I think his comment at the meeting where he said it's not a need, I think was a smokescreen, because for sure it's a need. And you know why I know that? Simple. Dan Campbell said it. And one of them is fibbing. And I'm going to take the 50% guess that it's Brad Holmes.
Yeah, look, cornerback, especially after everything that's happened with Cam Sutton, it is now you're probably your most pressing need. It was one of your bigger needs going into the offseason. And now when you lose the guy who was last year's number one cornerback for you, he was going to be shifted back to a number two cornerback where he probably would have excelled a little bit more. And then he went all crazy and decided to start choking bitches, allegedly. It is now a bigger deal. It's a bigger need that you have to address and you have to fill. See, I take a little bit of a different stance than you. I think what's going to happen is, yeah, other people got to get paid. And I think guys realize that other guys got to get paid. But I think what happens is this team goes out and they address the cornerback position at the draft. I think they draft somebody, whether it's night one or it's night two, they're going to get somebody in one of these earlier rounds of the draft. And then I think what will happen is after that, they're going to come back, they're going to sit down, and they're going to kind of recalibrate. They're going to check out what the market has. They're going to see what guys might be cut. They're going to see who's still available, you know, and I think at that moment in time, they will shift and they will go and they'll bring a veteran in. Oh. And what will happen is they will buy that cornerback that they draft a little bit of time to get their feet under them. We talk about all the time, cornerbacks are slow to develop.
Yes.
They usually take about 2 years. So you go, you get a veteran. You let that veteran basically take over that number two cornerback position. You let your rookie cornerback kind of work in, get his feet wet, and kind of get up to speed slowly. Don't dump it all on him at once. Don't push him in that deep end of the pool. And I think then what happens is that one-year deal expires, and now you're able to move on with your new cornerback for the following year. And I think what happens then, frees up a little bit of cap space because that one-year contract has now come off the books. You can then reallocate some of that money to other guys, whether it's Amon-Ra St. Brown, Penei Sewell, the Jared Goff contract that we know is coming, to whomever it might be. They'll figure it out that way. But I think they will address this in two ways. One will be through the draft, and then one will be after the draft with a free agent cornerback.
I like it. I like what your head's at. It's very smart, because I think that's why you got Carlton Davis. That's why you got Amik Robertson. And you probably need one more veteran to probably fill out that room. You never know. It's interesting. That room is very important for the development of this football team. It's going to be the key position that will determine whether this football team is going to be successful in 2024 and take that next step forward, or do they take a step back?
You've seen that last year too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you're very wise to think that, to see that the free agency doesn't end even after the draft. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, where the confidence is in Emmanuel Mosley, because that's a guy that also could take a spot in that room. And you also have the younger Gilmore that maybe they expect to take another step forward. So you have guys on the roster, but we just don't think that they're talented enough to earn a spot.
That's the weird thing, right?
Yeah.
So Emmanuel Mosley is like the forgotten guy all the time.
Yep.
You know, like, we know he's there, but like, I don't think we put any stock in him because he's been hurt so much. And he didn't just miss last year and like pretty much all of last year. He played one play last year and then he was done. He missed a majority of the previous year. He's going on almost two full years of not playing snaps. That's a long time to be out of the game. Then to come back and come back from basically two critical ACL tears, that's tough, man. It is hard to come back from that.
Yep. Well, before we get out of here, because I think you realize now when you go on our Twitter page, at Detroit Podcast, I have an addiction. I love me some professional...
Porn?
No. Wait, maybe I gotta look into that a little more. I thought that's healthy. I thought that when that goes away, when that urge goes away, then that means your testosterone. I thought that I was gonna correlate that with, oh man, my testosterone's lower. I gotta get it filled up when those urges go away. But maybe I gotta look at that internally, honestly. Maybe I gotta talk to someone about that. But no, wrestling belts. I have purchased my 10th. Wrestling belt. And that's bad. When I counted them up, I'm like, oh well, I made an impulse buy because the one with the old English D, I just had to get it. So I took advantage of the free shipping, 24 hours. I was like, holy shit. If they're going to start delivering shit in 24 hours, I'm going to have to work a fourth job, because I got the WWE world title, the AEW world title, two winged web belts, one black, one white. I got the Universal title in blue. I got the Tigers one, Intercontinental, Tag Team, old WCW, and an old WWE belt. 10. And I think I said to myself, holy shit, when I put it on, it felt good. Took photos with it at Detroit Podcast. Then I was like loving it. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And then I said, shit, I don't got a spot to put this. I legit have maxed out my office. The office at work has four of them on the wall. I don't have a spot for it. So now I'm admitting the problem, and I'm saying that I think I'm retired. I cannot purchase any more belts unless... The 11th one would be the wingtip with the American Nightmare plates. That one could catch my attention, but they're not cheap. But what these companies have done, which is basically what I've been doing for the last 6 years, is a certain payment company, which will be unnamed, allows you to pay things over 6 months. So basically, that's my big purchase for the year, and I just pay it over 6 months. So in essence, it's just like a $50 bill, and I'm like, yeah, that's not bad. So if a company ever lets go of the no interest for 6 months, I feel like I'm getting so much value from doing that I cannot stop. So I have to stop. So the first step is to publicly declare my problem for wrestling belts. I have 10. I can't even wear all 10 if I wanted to. My three favorite are next to me. The Tigers one's on the floor. It's great. It's sweet. It doesn't spin. Kenny might steal it. But I think that I just want to say that it's time for me to allocate these resources maybe to charity, to put it into my kids' college fund, which I still do, but I'm not doing enough of a job. I've been kind of selfish lately. So I just want to put that out there. Wrestling belts are my thing, and I think that it's something that it needs to kind of now phase out as I get older, but it was cool, and you guys liked the Tigers one. The other ones, maybe you thought it was corny. You guys did like the Tigers one. I thought I'd get a pop. And it did. I thought that I would say that, hey, if I share this picture, it will end the Tigers' losing streak. So I'm to credit for the Tigers ending their losing streak because of the fact that I'm passionate about Detroit sports. And the fact is that I just have to stop with the impulse buys. And the first step is to admit it, and let's see where it goes. So we'll see if I can withhold buying more belts, because pretty soon it'll be like, you know, those houses where it's all wrestling belts and you step into the house and you're like, John, I can't get anywhere in this house. It's all wrestling belts. And I'm like, yeah, sorry, man. Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast. The best hour of the week is firing up the microphones. I tremendously respect all of you guys for following, retweeting, being part of our contest, and checking out everything at Detroit Podcast. It's basically the Wild West Circus of Twitter is our Twitter page. And we've been able to do it for 11 years. And to be able to interact with you guys has been great. To broadcast, to have fun every single week, lighting it up and chatting with my guy Adam has been the pleasure of life for the last 11 years in pretty stressful times. So everything is great, and we're going to keep it moving, keep it rolling as we talk more and more. Next week will probably be a little bit more draft heavy as more rumors come out regarding the Lions. Stay tuned to the Detroit Sports Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, share, tell everybody. These crazy guys have been doing it since before it was popular. For the Jock, Adam Strozinski, I am the Doc, John Macaroon. I can't wait to fire it up next week for the latest episode of Doc and Jock.